angular movement is immense, while also offering a generally lighter resistance load rather than a maximum heavy lift for higher repetitions in a more sustained period of work. This helps create a solid foundation for strength gains while also minimizing potential risk of injury. Next level, strength, 5 minutes. Strength is the body's ability to move a maximal load through muscular recruitment and contraction. How many bags of groceries can you carry from the car to the house? How many 737 jets can you tow if someone put you in a harness? Strength is not truly defined by those absolute numbers, however. Rather, it is measured holistically in relation to your body's frame and natural capacity. My strong is different from your strong because we are different humans. Strength training is not often thought of for its benefits beyond getting strong and building muscle. It does those things, but strength work also contributes to weight loss, a stronger heart, and increased bone density, as well as providing a good space to develop better body mechanics. Strong is also super sexy, all of which support performance in both life and sport, while ensuring the ability to do so at a higher level over the long haul. Top of the pyramid, power, 3 minutes. Power is the final tier, the tippy top of the pyramid. If strength is when force acts against resistance to create movement, then power is the rate or speed at which that force is enacted to create the movement. This is perhaps the most important system for athletes, so many athletic training regimens highly prioritize power development. It is how hard you can throw a punch, how explosively you can jump, how far you can throw a ball. It is generating the maximum amount of force possible. The power system is important. It wouldn't be included in the training pyramid if it weren't. But it is by far the most taxing on the body. So for non-competitive athletes, you don't need to spend a lot of time training it to own the day and be effective in life. You simply need to develop enough power to draw on when you need to sprint to the bus, jump out of the way of a bicycle, or defend yourself if necessary. Sprinting, plyometrics, and unconventional tools like battle ropes are all great, easy, low-skill ways to train full-body power development. Prescription. I don't know you. I don't know how you slept last night, how your body feels, whether you have any injuries, or what your fitness level is or isn't. But by committing to own the day, you are going to do something to move your body. We broke down what that might look like into 3 levels. Level 1. Have fun and just get moving. If you are just getting started with training, or you feel like you have a long, intimidating road ahead, start out by slowly working your way into the shallow end of the training pool, sometimes literally, with elemental work that is fundamental to human movement. For me, there are a few things that are fun, including playing a game of any sort, followed perhaps by doing some animal crawls across the turf or dropping in for a little vulgar vinyasa at Black Swan Yoga. Here are 3 different ways you can get started. Time to play. Remember playing tag or tug of war when you were a kid and only stopping when you were panting for air? This was the inspiration for primal play, a method developed by movement coach Daryl Edwards. The beauty of playing a game is that when you're engaged in something fun, you forget that you are working out. Here are a few of my favorite games that create bonds and break a sweat. Shoulder tag. The goal of the game is to tag the other players anywhere in the shoulder. It's kind of like fencing and tag had a love child, with cardio, mobility, endurance, and hand-eye coordination each playing an important role. Boxing trainer and Olympic bronze medalist for Great Britain, Tony Jeffries, played this game every session with his mates leading up to the games. He credits it with his speed and movement, plus they always had a laugh. Play to 10 clean touches, or go for 3 minutes, then tell me how you feel, once you catch your breath. Crosshop. Clasp right arms with someone of similar size by doing what amounts to a forearm handshake, where your palms should be on the inside of each other's arm. Then lift your right foot off the ground behind you by bending your knee. The goal is to tug or push your opponent using your clasped arm until they are forced to drop their foot to the ground or release their grip on your arm. A lot of hilarious hopping ensues, making this game as much about strength and cardio as it is about plyometric power. Make sure to switch arms too so you don't create imbalances. Palm push. In this game, you line up facing your opponent. Palm to palm, you push or withdraw your hand until the other person is off balance. The goal is to get the other person to take a step or to touch any other part of your body besides the flat part of your hand. This isn't as intense a workout as the other forms of play, but definitely one of the most fun. Animal movements. Undoubtedly the most well-paid, the most followed, and perhaps the most well-known mixed martial arts fighter of our epoch is Conor McGregor. The Notorious, as he is called, has won title belts in two weight classes in dramatic knockout fashion, and more than held his own in one of the highest money boxing matches of all time against perhaps the greatest pound-for-pound boxer of all time, Floyd Mayweather. His secret? According to him, it's hard work. And part of that hard work is doing ground-based or animal flow training with the legendary movement specialist Ido Portal. This type of movement often has you moving on all fours across space, a practice Conor often takes when entering the octagon itself. It improves flexibility, balance, and spatial body awareness, as well as perhaps a little bit of something else special. I incorporate animal movements, specifically the bear crawl and the ape walk, into almost every one of my workouts. Bear crawl. I prefer the straight leg version of this movement, with your feet and hands flat on the ground and arms and legs extended. Starting from this position, you move your right foot up close to your right hand, but slightly behind into the outside. Then your right hand moves up, then your left foot, then left hand. It's great for strengthening hips, hamstrings, and butt, as well as upper arms. Ape walk. This movement is a lateral movement with bent knees, flat back, in which you push your weight onto your hands and shuffle both feet to the right. Then release your hands and come to a straight-backed squat with legs still bent. Put your hands down again and repeat. Make sure to go in both directions for this. It's a great warm-up and hip opener that will work the quads as well. Yoga, the all-in-one. Yoga is everywhere, and for good reason. It's one of the best ways to connect mind and body and access levels of higher consciousness. A lot of people view yoga as stretching, like it's some kind of ancient Indian calisthenics. While stretching is part of the practice, the magic of yoga is the utilization of breath to push through self-imposed limitations. As you practice, you start to hear your mind squealing, "That's far enough. I can't do that. What are we doing later?" Anything to take you out of the intensity of the present moment. But you stay steady with your intent. You focus on your breath. You release stray thoughts with each exhale. You bring in life force with each inhale. You drown the fire of the mind with a generous ocean of respiration and perspiration. You can go all the way into the spiritual side of yoga. You can wear all white. You can take it really seriously. Or you can just breathe, stretch, sweat, and connect to the best version of yourself. If you're just starting out, that's where you should aim with your yoga practice. That was the idea behind Black Swan Yoga when we acquired it in 2014. You're as likely to hear Drake as you are wind chimes, because you're as likely to be seated next to a next-level practitioner as you are a retiree looking to stay mobile. And you can be sure, with the inclusion of an infrared heating system, that the sweat flows freely, puddling up with the remnants of the parts of yourself you are leaving behind as you end your session in Shavasana, with the mind a quiet and humble servant, and your body at rest with the full force of mindfulness. Pro tip, yoga anywhere. When my fiancé travels abroad for work, she does yoga almost every day. in Amsterdam, in Prague, in China, and all sorts of other places that aren't known for their yoga. Yoga doesn't need a fancy studio. It doesn't even need a mat. They didn't have mats in India. But you should have some instruction to get the most out of it. Level 2. The Own the Day Workout. We have created two workouts specifically for this book, derived directly from the philosophy built into this chapter generally and the training pyramid specifically. The first is perfect for beginners and people at an intermediate fitness level and relies solely on bodyweight movement, making it easy to do at home, in a dorm, or an airport hotel room. The second is designed for those between the intermediate and advanced fitness levels and uses a single kettlebell. Find the right weight for your ability to make the workout similarly easy to knock out. Check out the enhancement PDF to see instructional diagrams of each exercise. Body weight, basic to intermediate. Cardio, steady state, 10 minutes. Run, bike, dance, row, swim, jump rope, shadow box. Pick any one or any combination and go with it. Mobility, 10 minutes. The following drills should be performed in a circuit fashion for as many rounds as possible in the allotted time. Egyptian, 5 reps each side. Lunge twist, 5 reps each side. Standing leg circle, 5 reps each side. Power, 3 minutes. Alternating split jump from max height, 10 seconds, followed by 20 seconds rest, 6 sets. Strength, 5 minutes. Frog push-ups, 5 seconds down and 5 seconds up, 5 sets of 3. Muscular endurance, 8 minutes. Alternate between the following 2 exercises, 4 sets. Plank, 40 seconds, then 20 seconds rest. Sit through, 40 seconds, then 20 seconds rest. Stretching, release, 5 minutes. Kneeling hip flexor stretch. Kneeling hamstring stretch. Shoulder bridge. Kettlebell, intermediate to advanced. Cardio, steady state, 10 minutes. Run, bike, dance, row, swim, jump rope, shadow box. Pick any one or any combination and go with it. Mobility, 10 minutes. The following drills should be performed in a circuit fashion for as many rounds as possible in the allotted time. Windmill, 5 reps each side. Halo, 5 reps each side. Bootstrapper, 5 reps each side. Power, 3 minutes. Sumo squat jumps, 10 seconds, then 20 seconds rest. 6 sets. Strength, 5 minutes. Super slow presses, 5 seconds up, 5 seconds down, 5 sets of 3 reps. Muscular endurance, 8 minutes. Perform the following drills for as many rounds as possible in 8 minutes. Kettlebell swings, 15 reps. Single arm thruster, 5 reps each side. Stretching, release, 5 minutes. Couch stretch. Pigeon pose. Standing forward fold. Level 3. Work with a pro. To really take your training to the next level, you'll need additional resources beyond this book. Check out www.onitacademy.com for some ideas on where to get started. Now do it. Your body is the only car you are ever going to drive. It is up to you whether you want to supercharge that bitch and make it purr like a kitten and roar like a Hemi for the next 200,000 miles, or whether you're going to let it rust out into a junker at a metal scrapyard. I assume, if you're reading this book, that you want the former. You want to be behind the wheel of a healthy, fine-tuned sex machine. I won't lie to you, getting there won't happen quickly. But don't get frustrated. You just have to start. You just have to do a little bit of work. Make the commitment to put one foot in front of the other and get to the gym. Find ways to hold yourself accountable, either with a workout buddy, a trainer, or just social media. Trust me, the moment that first drop of sweat hits your brow, you are going to start getting help from your body. The animal inside you wants to move. It wants to work. It wants to thrive. It's all a game of momentum. One well-executed workout will leave you feeling more capable for the next, and so on, until you are ripping through workouts in fifth gear with the top down and the music blasting. I don't care how you motivate yourself to get your workout in, as long as you don't use shame and self-judgment. I don't want to hear about you berating yourself into the gym by telling yourself how ugly or lazy or stupid you are. Not only is that not true, it's not going to work, and it's going to alter the effects of your workout in the opposite direction that positive motivation produces. Don't believe me? Cue the science. In 2007, a couple of researchers in the psychology department at Harvard, Alia Crum and Ellen Langer, decided to test the effect of mindset on exercise and health. They chose as their subjects 84 hotel maids across more than half a dozen hotels who did more or less the same amount of work each day and little or no exercise. They split the group in two, telling one half that the work they did cleaning rooms was good exercise and, in fact, satisfied the Surgeon General's recommendations for an active lifestyle. The other half of the group was told nothing related to their work. They were the control group. 4 weeks later, Crum and Langer checked back with the maids and discovered that the women who'd received the positive messages about their work actually perceived that they were getting more exercise than before, even though their behavior hadn't really changed at all. Not only that, but they also displayed significant physical changes, including decrease in weight, blood pressure, body fat, waist-to-hip ratio, and body mass index. What might be even more astounding was a controlled experiment in which researchers asked 10 volunteers to simply imagine flexing their biceps as hard as they could 5 times a week. To prevent unintentional tensing of the muscles, they placed sensors on the biceps. What happened? The test group increased actual bicep strength by 13.5% in just a few weeks, whereas the control group, who didn't perform the mental gymnastics, gained nothing. The gains persisted over 3 months, even after the mental training stopped. That is the power of positive intention on your health and fitness. You can be sure negative motivation can have an equally deleterious effect. So if you are having trouble using your mind to get you into the gym, at least start by using your mind to imagine you are there. And when you do, think about your physical conditioning and go big. Squat boxcars full of imaginary children and pull 737s with your teeth like your name was Magnus and it was 1984 when steroids were good for you. Your mind is the ultimate unconventional tool in pursuit of unconventional results. Listen to it. Harness it, and go own your workout. Remember, healthy is sexy, and it's about time to get frisky. 3 pointers. Exercise is a miracle drug. You just need to take it. If you haven't been training regularly, the key is to start slow and simply get moving. Even if you are a seasoned vet, mixing in some play can keep the enthusiasm for training high. Conventional means of exercise are going to create conventional results. And if you go to your local mall and look around, that isn't going to cut it. Try out unconventional equipment like kettlebells, clubs, maces, and ropes. An ideal workout trains multiple power systems, including mobility, flexibility, endurance, cardio, power, and strength. Use the training pyramid as a model to ensure you are training in a well-rounded and sustainable manner. Chapter 11. Reset and Reconnect. We do not stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing. George Bernard Shaw. You've been gone all day, but now you're home. It's time to really be home. That means work has to be fully put aside. Put your phone on the charger, leave your computer in the bag, and connect with your life. You're going to quiet down the mind and raise up your spirits. You're going to kiss your lover, wrestle your dogs, or push a few notes through a musical instrument. Most important, you're going to enjoy yourself. If you spend a day without laughter and a smile, you haven't owned the day, because there is no destination in a well-lived life. There is only the journey. Getting owned. Our bodies and our genes were formed in tribes. Thousands of years ago, we ate and played as a group, slept shoulder to shoulder, and secured food as a clan. The idea of going off on your own to find yourself wouldn't have just seemed crazy. It would have seemed downright dangerous. The tribe was how you survived. For our bodies, then, being around other people is as much a part of our nature as air or water. Which might explain why so many of us today feel so starved. Not of those essential life-giving elements, but of the life-sustaining bonds that we used to have with other people in our tribe. Being in close-knit groups is what being a human is all about. We're social creatures. And even though many of us have hyperactive digital social lives and flesh-and-blood social connections, the fact is that at no time in human history have so many people felt so alone. Our bodies can feel and sense this loneliness, and they are responding the only way bodies know how, by making us sick more often, by sinking us into deep depression, by throwing off our hormonal balance, and by making us find chemical substitutes for the human contact that we so crave. This isn't anecdotal, it's data. Middle-aged and older adults have up to a 30% greater risk of dying from all causes when lonely and living alone. Not so long ago on the scale of human history, we used to work together, communicating and striving for a common goal. Now we can work from home on our computer, get food delivered by a stranger, and peer through the peephole of our own experience at the kaleidoscope of social media and all its pretty images of people seeming to have way more fun than us. Is it any wonder that loneliness is rapidly becoming a public health crisis on the scale of obesity and substance abuse? But if loneliness kills, the opposite is also true. Being together heals. Research shows that there's a 50% higher likelihood of survival in people with strong social relationships. In fact, I think of togetherness as some of the best medicine we can give ourselves, the kind that releases life-enhancing chemicals in our brains and leads to life-affirming stories for our spirits. You know what is just a straight-up good time? Connecting with people you love. Playing and learning with your chosen family, your tribe. Cooking them food. Having them bring you wine. Doing something fun together. Taking the opportunity to reset from your workday and enjoying yourself. Here's the mistaken assumption of a lot of hard chargers. That wanting to come home and be with your family and friends and loved ones is just a sign you aren't badass enough to crush it. If you can't work from 6 p.m. to midnight, you have no chance against the wolves of Wall Street or the scions of Silicon Valley. I've known wolves and scions. Most of them are miserable. They are getting owned by their own ambition and expectations. So don't confuse owning the day with figuring out ways to squeeze out more and more productivity in less time. Owning is not about working more. It's about living a full and fulfilled life. One that speaks to what our bodies need most, which, yes, includes meaningful bursts of productivity, but also includes the rich and joyful connection that other people give us. If you don't connect with others, then you can't own the day. Plain and simple. Owning it. You are a human being, not a human doing. This time after work is a time of transition, from the thing that you do to the person that you are. In that way, you need to think about this initial period when you come home as a way of disconnecting both from work and from the stuff in your day that you've been working for. Your dream home, your kids' college fund, that promotion, that boat. There is always more to do in service of your goals, and if you don't know what to do with them when you're off the clock, I'll tell you in chapter 14, it's very easy to let yourself slip into another round of work. Instead, you have to give yourself permission to enjoy this break you've earned. It doesn't take much to blow past these moments and turn family time into work time by another name. Jumping straight into dinner or scolding your kids about homework or doing chores or turning on the television, all of it misses the point. This is a time to be with the people you love. There was a time in America when we wouldn't have had to be as emphatic about this point. In an earlier era, we used to do things socially. People were in bowling leagues, played music with each other, sat on their porches and talked. Ironically, in a world of social media, we've gotten considerably less social. The result has been an epidemic of existential angst and loneliness. The easiest way to solve that in your life is to actively seek out in-person connection and community after work. Go to the dog park, play in a sports league, create true family time. It actually matters a lot less what you do and much more that you simply do something social. Whatever it is, be around people and be present while doing so. We are social creatures and we thrive on community. Especially after a hard day's work, this is your reward. Don't just let the drudgery of daily existence wash over you when you walk through the front door. You should be excited about this time. It's time you've been given to reconnect with yourself and with your tribe. Connect with yourself. You've spent much of the day working hard and training hard. If you're like most of us, your mind is still humming. Perhaps it's the inner critic judging you on today's performance or the premeditator planning tomorrow's attack. Maybe it's the warrior doing what he or she does best. Maybe it's the ego ranting, "How dare you," to everyone who didn't bow to its grandeur. When we say connect to yourself, it's a tricky thing because you are so many different selves. But there is one self that remains when the multiplicity dissolves into the singular. Let's call that the true self. Presence embodied. To connect to that self, to be that self, you need to find a way to harmonize everything else, to take all of the discordant tones from all of the different voices in your mind and turn their hum into one beautiful note that is exactly you. It is the essence of the waking flow state, mindfulness in motion. And with any harmony, sometimes the best way to get it is to add an instrument. Play an instrument. I thought I was a musical disaster, like a Chernobyl-level musical disaster, bad enough that if I picked up an instrument and put myself to it, the ears who heard me play would grow three lobes in radioactive protest. I believed that until I was 31 years old. Then I picked up a Native American flute. Anyone who heard me play that first week would have probably agreed. It sounded like the outtakes from a grease pig-catching contest. I'm surprised my backyard wasn't full of neighborhood dogs some of those nights. But slowly I started to get the hang of it. One by one, notes started to connect and music started to form. The more I got out of my own head, the more harmony I created. All music starts from nothing. Paradoxically, as I become more still in my mind, the music becomes more alive. But sometimes the hum of my other selves wins the fight for oneness, and I have trouble giving myself permission to get comfy and lift the flute to my lips. In those moments, I need a little help quieting down their perpetual angst, and so I will reach for a chemical state shift to make it happen. A little glass of wine, or a few puffs of my favorite flower almost always do the trick. If you want to get high, now's the time. This is a health book that green lights drinking a glass of wine or lighting up a bowl of sticky marijuana flower. Most health books don't do that, and guess what? You do it anyway. Half of us drink alcohol, and half of a quarter of us smoke weed. I'll let you guess which side of the survey I'm on for both of those statistics. Because intrinsically, you and I see the value proposition as positive. Unless you are addicted, of course, in which case the addiction is dragging you by the nipple rings through what you pretend are your own choices. So if you're into alcohol and marijuana, you aren't breaking the law, and you still want to own your day, after your workout is the perfect time to have a drink or smoke a little of the sticky icky. The key is a little. There are both emotional and physical reasons for this. On the emotional level, you've just completed the hard work part of your day. It's nice to save a mini celebration to reward yourself for the discipline. It's something to look forward to, a way to connect and harmonize with yourself. But you don't want it to get sloppy and get away from you. Having too much has a way of taking that internal discord you've been trying to harmonize and setting the voices against each other like a cockfight where your mind is the ring. Choosing to intoxicate after training is potentiated by the fact that you're likely going to be mildly dehydrated, meaning that you are going to have less blood volume. This means that the same amount of active ingredient in your blood will have a proportionately higher concentration. With alcohol, you are going to have nothing in your stomach to slow down the absorption rate, so you won't need as much to drink to get the buzz you want. And with liver glycogen levels so much lower after a workout, the sugars in the alcohol will metabolize easier, which means that a glass of wine is not that bad for you at all. Maximum bang, minimum bucks. But two or three can send you down a less than conscious path. The general rule with any intoxicating substance, particularly alcohol, is to use the least amount necessary to achieve the desired effect. This has a couple of advantages. One, it's cost effective. And two, it limits any negative side effects like toxicity to the liver or lungs. In short, you want to be your own cheap date, and the best time for that is post-workout. Same goes with weed. When inhaled, the active ingredients of marijuana, THC and CBD, don't pass through the stomach, but smoking with lower blood volume and an empty stomach still exacerbates their effects. This is likely why platinum rapper Master P, in his weed anthem, Pass Me to Green, proclaimed that real smokers don't blow no green on empty stomachs. A lot of people treat how much they consume as a badge of honor. I get it. I've been there too. I was a frat dog, Kappa Sig. But I've also grown up and learned the hard way that it's a dumb metric. Deep dive on cannabis and pain. Many of us are uncomfortable in the skin we are in. The source of that discomfort is pain, physical pain, emotional pain, spiritual and psychic pain, just fucking pain. When the pain gets bad, we'll reach for anything to alleviate it. A recent study by Alan Krueger at Princeton University revealed that nearly half of unemployed, working-age men are addicted to opiate painkillers. The problem with these painkillers is that they are highly addictive and push you toward dissociation from your body rather than a heightened connection to it. Cannabis is different. A 2015 Journal of American Medical Association meta-analysis of nearly 80 cannabinoid trials across more than 6,400 participants found a 64% reduction in chronic pain. Other analyses of multiple double-blind clinical trials confirm the value of marijuana for chronic pain reduction and pain scale assessment. But it's not just the aches and pains of a hard day's labor that cannabis can alleviate. It has benefits for a banged-up brain as well, particularly the high CBD strains. Dr. Dan Engel, MD, author of the Concussion Repair Manual, says of CBD, "In my practice treating concussions and post-concussion syndrome, no supplement has been as effective as CBD." Bazooka Joe Valtellini, a former world champion kickboxer turned commentator, was forced into retirement after repeated concussions. CBD has been the only thing that keeps his headaches away. With opioid use spiraling out of control, the state-by-state wave of legalization of medical marijuana and CBD might have come just in time, because nothing is a bigger buzzkill for productivity and personal connection than headaches and chronic pain. Here's how the pros use it. In the modern world, the pros use it because cannabis is renowned for its ability to connect us with our creative inner self. One analysis of over 30 surveys found that more than 50% of users report enhanced creativity when using cannabis. That's definitely a big part of why I experiment with cannabis. When it comes to owning my day, I want that marked benefit to performance and the increase in overall enjoyment of life that comes with being creative. And it's not just me. Steve Jobs used marijuana and hashish to make him relaxed and creative. World-class athlete and nutrition coach Ben Greenfield gets down with a vape full of that Washington State high CBD good, and a glass of elderberry wine sourced from an elderberry tree literally in his own backyard. Even when he's training to run an Ironman or the next Spartan race, this is his jam. By dinner, the effects of the vape and the wine have worn off or settled into harmony, and he can finish out the night strong, playing his ukulele, teaching his kids, and connecting with his wife. What is important to always remember is that we have a healthy relationship with all powerful plants. That is not always the case. One of the most vocal and eloquent advocates for the legalization of cannabis, Graham Hancock, talks openly about how he fell into a poor relationship with it, something more like a dependency than a decision. You will have to judge for yourself, based on how your mind and your body respond to it, whether cannabis is right for you, whether it stimulates connection and creativity, or demotivates you and incentivizes Doritos. Just take it slow and see how it goes, especially when you eat it. Because I will 100% laugh at your 911 call when you think that you are going to die from eating that second cookie. Remember, people have been using ganja for 8,000 years. You don't need to eat all the weed tonight. Connect with your tribe. With all the noise in our own heads, it's no wonder that we sometimes choose to be alone rather than to connect with people. But a funny thing happens when we connect with others. We start to realize that we are all pretty much the same. We all have fears and thoughts that we can't shake out of our head, beliefs that we stubbornly hold on to, and things that keep us awake at night. When we start to open ourselves up to people, we transcend that crushing loneliness. Connection cures us. And those with whom we connect most tightly and most regularly become our tribe. One of the great blessings in my life is my ability to connect with so many different people. It makes me a better leader in my company. It makes me a better friend. Honestly, I've become so attached to those feelings of connectedness that I look for company no matter where I am. Yet deep down, I'm an introvert who requires bouts of solitude to recharge. But man, do I love people. People are awesome. Even though, just like trees stretching hard to find light, they can get a little bent in the trunk and twisted as they take on trauma and search for love. Still, it's easy to let connections dissolve and friendships atrophy. The dopamine hits from social media and our email inbox make living your whole damn life online or at work seem almost worth it. But it's not, and you can't, and you shouldn't try. You'll get so much more out of a meal with a small group of friends than with a big group of clients who are footing the bill. You will be filled with more light and love hearing about your family's day than you ever will by adding another 1,000 Twitter or Instagram followers. Just trust me on this. Unplug and reconnect. These connections will help you own your day and love your life. I know they have for me. I know that it's a love of people that's helped me thrive as a person, succeed in business, and achieve the balance I have in my life. My friends have helped me when things have gotten difficult, and I've paid it forward for them too. Sure, those probably seem like the most practical elements of friendship, but you would be shocked at how many people I meet who would agree with this idea and have no idea what to do with it. No idea how to connect or where to find common experience that produces uncommon bonds. Fortunately, I have a few ideas. Listen to music. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to rock out with your cock out and jam out with your clam out, or not if there are kids around. Music isn't just fun, it's scientifically proven fun. The research shows that when music is playing at home, people become physically closer. People are literally 12% closer when music is playing than when it's not. They actually measured this. When the music's going, people are a third more likely to cook together and almost 90% more likely to invite people over. They are more likely to laugh together, and here's the kicker, they are more likely to say the words, I love you. Oh, and then there's the most important connection of all. In a study conducted by the speaker company Sonos in conjunction with Apple Music and the neuroscientist Daniel Levitin, couples reported a stunning increase in intimacy when listening to music, and a nearly 40% increase in what they hilariously called awake time in bed. I'm guessing that doesn't mean reading Harry Potter. So go ahead and pump up the volume. Get silly. When did we stop playing? At some point, the backpack of responsibility weighed down our shoulders and made us get serious. Grow up, says the world. How about fuck you? Take that backpack off and play. Join a skee-ball league. Raid a bouncy castle. Buy a pinball machine. I have two pinball machines. My favorite is Avatar. My whole backyard, in fact, is built like an adult playground, with a slack line, a trampoline, knife targets, volleyball, frisbee golf. I have a dartboard, a pool table, foosball. The gym at Onnit HQ is a playground, too. We have a loop in our jiu-jitsu room designed to allow adults to play the hot lava game, where you pretend the ground is lava and you have to travel a lap without touching it. If you've forgotten how to play, that's one of the great things kids are for. They can remind us what we've forgotten about the heart. Get on the level with someone younger than you and let loose. It's not only going to be fun. Research shows that if you act younger, your biological markers actually start to reverse. Harvard psychologist Ellen Langer writes in her book Counterclockwise about an experiment where she took 8 men in their 70s and put them in an environment where everything around them, from the music to the television, the car in the driveway, the newspapers and magazines in the house, mimicked what life was like 2 decades earlier. A week later, the men, who'd arrived frail and on walkers and canes, were playing an impromptu game of touch football on the lawn. It wasn't just their bodies that felt younger. The men in the test group scored 63% higher on an intelligence test. It was a powerful testament to the power of the mind and the placebo effect. Youth might really be a state of mind after all. So play. If you believe you are too old to play, you will become too old to play. If you stay young in heart, spirit, and belief, you will stay young in body and mind as well. Play with pets. People are not the only living creatures who are members of your tribe. And games are not the only things you can play with. In America, especially, pets are truly man's and woman's best friend. I have a pet dog. She's an Alaskan Klee-Kai, and her name is Lobita, Spanish for little wolf. She's my best furry friend, and I love her because in the daytime she's more like a cat, content to do her own thing, but first thing in the morning she is a little kiss bomb ready to explode. Who doesn't want to have a shower of love and licks first thing in the morning? There are selfish reasons we love our pets, of course. They're a ready-made solution to loneliness. But the positive research on pet ownership is truly compelling. Dr. Robert Sapolsky, for example, has shared findings that dogs and humans have co-evolved to mutually produce the connection hormone oxytocin. Pet ownership has also been shown to reduce blood pressure and resting heart rate, and pets have helped kids with no brothers or sisters develop greater empathy, higher self-esteem, and increased participation in social and physical activities. Pets are the exercise of the animal kingdom, a miracle drug with ears. That said, pets are a responsibility. But with services like Rover available for immediate on-demand dog watching in real homes, the downside of owning a dog or a cat has been greatly diminished. I used to tease my friends who would pass on an epic vacation because they couldn't find a babysitter for their dog. But now, as long as you're willing to pay a few extra bucks, you can have it all. A happy pet and your freedom. Let's keep it simple. Get a dog and get ready for cuddles. You won't regret it. Prescription. Connect with yourself. The first thing you do when you come home from work or emerge from the productive part of the day is reset. While the mindfulness on the ride home should have started the state shift, the last thing you want to do when you get to your house is jump back on the computer and keep the stress train rolling. You need a proper reset. For me, it's the flute or another instrument you'll learn about in Chapter 15, the didgeridoo. And when I play, after a few moments, I am no longer Aubrey Marcus. I am just wind and energy that is transforming into sound. It is the easiest and fastest way for me to get out of my head and connect to my unified voice. Since it's the perfect time to enjoy a glass of wine or take a few puffs of cannabis, occasionally I'll go there too. Or drink a cup of kava, the relaxing herb they drink in Fiji, or even light up a cigar. This is a signal that for right now, I'm clocked out and off duty. If you don't like any form of intoxicant, then maybe grab a stevia soda. Zevia cream soda is the best. And just enjoy the moment. The key is to create the conduit to connection. Find yours, and not only will you tune your body to the key of yourself, but you will open up in ways that make reconnecting with your tribe feel like second nature and make loneliness feel light years away. Connect with your tribe. Jesus, the great Christian mystic, said, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." This is the golden rule. Let's take it one step further to the deeper meaning. Do unto others because they are you. You just living a different life. From that perspective, no one is too different or too strange to connect with. But what still keeps us apart is that we judge people as harshly as we judge ourselves. We find people lacking like we find ourselves lacking. However, if we can learn to truly see others, we can also learn to truly see ourselves. I want you to imagine someone who has annoyed you, and to see that person as yourself living a different life. Jump inside his body, not as a resident, but as a visitor. Use that power of imagination to visualize all the forces that shaped him into who he is. His family, his environments, the food he ate, the pets he loved and lost. Just like a tree that stretches roots to the water for nourishment and extends its leaves to the sun, what has he been stretching toward? Where is his nourishment? Maybe he hasn't been getting enough. Maybe it's too far out of reach. Maybe he is curled and withered as a result. Where are you curled and withered? See this person as a little boy or a little girl, just like you. What was she like on the playground at recess? Did the kids play with her or shun her? Did she deserve to be shunned? See the world through her eyes as if they were your eyes. And maybe you'll find that those eyes aren't so different from your eyes after all. Now do it. Bronnie Ware, a palliative care nurse, wrote a book about the top 5 deathbed regrets. These are people who lived an entire life, accumulated all that wisdom and experience, and had a chance to look back and say what they would have done differently. That is something worth paying attention to. There are 3 that really stand out. 1. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. This sentiment came from every single male patient she cared for, every single one. 2. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. Our connections bring the dance to our life, and yet we find ourselves with too little time to enjoy these moments. But I think another problem is that at a certain point, we stop making really great new friends. In the absence of rituals like school and sports, we don't take the time to forge deeper connections with people. Whether it is having an all-night bender in Vegas or a 10-day journey in Peru, extreme experiences have the potential to form the deepest bonds. Go for it. Leave your important adult self behind and have an adventure with people you might very well love. 3. I wish that I had let myself be happier. This one breaks my heart. Not just because it came from the mouths of human souls who were out of chances to do something about it, but because they knew, or at least they finally realized, that they had a choice in the matter. They did not say, "I wish I was happier," leaving happiness as a capricious blessing from fortune herself. Wisdom in old age led them to say, "I wish I had let myself be happier. I wish I had made a better choice." Sometimes that choice is a hard one to make. We can become addicted to accumulating things, chasing goals, and being productive, killing it, crushing it. But you know what feels better? Owning it. Owning the joy, love, and laughter that true connection can bring to our lives. We have to choose to play, choose to connect, choose to be happy. Sometimes it comes wafting through the air like a unicorn's fart. And sometimes you gotta go to where the unicorns are eating their magical beans and start sniffing. That's what this pot-flavored pep talk has been all about. 3 pointers. Loneliness kills. But combating loneliness doesn't mean having just anyone around you. It's about forging deeper connections with yourself first and with your tribe. To connect with yourself, don't be shy about creating a little state shift. A puff of cannabis or a glass of wine after your workout and before dinner can be beneficial to the mind while minimizing challenges to the body. Then, to really deepen the connection, pick up a musical instrument and learn to play. To connect with others, collapse the judgments that separate you by seeing them as you living a different life. Then play some music, have a laugh, but most importantly, make the effort to cultivate the sense of community around you. Chapter 12. Eat dinner like a king. When walking, walk. When eating, eat. Zen proverb. After any good battle, the warrior looks forward to a feast. And that feast is dinner. Go ahead, champ. Eat up and enjoy. The day is not quite won yet, but you deserve this meal. Break bread, grab some popcorn, eat some chocolate, and enjoy. You deserve it not just because you worked for it, but because food is a great part of life. When you go a little too far, don't worry, we've got your back. Eat it consciously, digest it well, and prime yourself for the best kind of dessert, sex. Getting owned. I think a little part of humanity died circa 2013, because that was the year Soylent was born. For the uninitiated, Soylent is a food replacement sludge created by three guys from Silicon Valley, shock of all shocks, who hate joy. Their concoction, named after Soylent Green, a dystopian 1973 science fiction movie in which food wafers are made out of human flesh, is a liquid that alleges to give you all of your nutritional needs while removing the necessity for food. That, apparently, is its selling point. You drink three shakes a day and voila, no more food in your life. In fact, when the founders of this stuff were interviewed by The New Yorker, they were quoted as saying, "Food is such a large burden." And their website leads with the tagline, "Taking eating off your plate." Food is the enemy in their flavorless world, and Soylent is the cold liquid assassin that's come to kill it off. If you are one of those people for whom food has gone from joy to chore, I think you need a hug. Food is a biological necessity, yes, but it is also a pleasure, a luxury for the masses. When did we all become that busy? When did we pack so much into our schedules that we can't even take a moment to put some food in our mouths and appreciate it? If a poet from antiquity walked through a grocery store like Erewhon or Whole Foods today, he would cease writing about anything else and send word to the four corners of the empire that the Garden of Eden had been found here on Earth. He would relish the sensory experience and revel in the bounty. And yet we open our refrigerators and have the audacity to complain, "Ugh, there's nothing to eat." It reminds me of the Chinese emperors that Matt Ridley talks about in The Red Queen, who had harems of up to 50,000 virgin women, but complained ceaselessly about the burden of having sex with them all. Man, I wish there was Facebook back then. Can you imagine a Friday late night post from Emperor Ming? "Concubine number 38,877 wants to go again, FML, angry face." Talk about a whole new level of first world problems. But we are those emperors. In Austin, we have these expansive food truck parks that are like visiting a brothel for your taste buds. You can get a Korean barbecue cheesesteak, a boudin ball with fried alligator, and a lobster corn dog in the space of 5 minutes. And we want to give this up? In favor of Silicon Valley's version of SlimFast? Of pre-prepared and pre-packaged microwave meals, instant noodles, fast casual, drive-through, and all the rest? None of which pay any mind to our digestion, which is really where our heads need to be heading into the end of our day. Family time, sexy time, wind-down time, sleepy time. None of them are going to be great if your body spends the next 6 hours fighting what you just put in it. Needless to say, this has all got to change. We all need to become foodies. Not the snobby kind that will only eat endive if it's grown with compost made of koala turds and watered by the tears of butterflies. We need to be the grateful kind. The kind who enjoy ourselves, who smile when we hit the produce section and all the fruits and veggies of the world are presented with dewdrops of mist on their leaves, and keep a positive mindset around food. After all, food isn't what makes you fat or makes you feel bad or holds you back at work. Food is what keeps you alive. It's what brings friends together. Breaking bread breaks down walls and builds up connections. What can be better than that? Owning it. Okay, dinner time. You've got two objectives. One, enjoy yourself. And two, get ready to have sex. And I don't mean going down on a big plate of ribs. I mean fucking and preparing food that's going to support your sex machine. This is the meal where you really get to have some fun, if you let yourself. See, the thing about enjoying your food is that if you're worried all the time about what you are eating, eating is gonna suck. And ironically, the more you worry about it, the worse the food will actually be for you. We're going to get rid of this anxiety and make food fun again. The rule is moderation in all things, including moderation. We're going to teach you how to eat a full dinner that supports your digestion, supports sex, supports sleep, and sets you up for a great night. We're also going to show you ways to cheat the right way and mitigate any damage done by too much sugar, booze, or just too much of everything. Dinner should be a celebration of a day fully owned, so let's make it that way. The work starts by believing that's okay, and that the food you're about to consume is going to nourish your body and mind. But first, some good news about your bad habits. The not-so-secret menu of indulgences. My friend Rich Roll, podcaster, author, and triathlete, is right. People love nothing more than good news about their bad habits. Well, you're welcome, because I'm about to give you some good news about cheese, chocolate, bread, and popcorn. Cheese has been in the doghouse of just about every nutrition movement since the turn of the century. The main knocks are that cheese is bad for your heart and bad for digestion. We've already illuminated the bullshit around the fat is bad for your heart hypothesis. So is cheese bad for your digestion? That depends on what cheese you are cutting. After all, in the cheese craze mania of the modern era, where cheese comes in cans, pastes, and little plastic pouches, we have done worse things to cheese than bulldogs have done to stuffed animals. But Cheese Whiz and Kraft Singles are not exactly the same thing as my favorite grass-fed raw goat cheese, which is the G-O-A-T of all cheese, digestively speaking. Raw milk cheese, like raw juice, has not been pasteurized. So any of the more delicate nutrients, probiotics, and enzymes that aid with digestion stay intact. This is likely why a survey done of 2,503 raw milk drinkers in Michigan revealed that 81% of those diagnosed with lactose intolerance reported reduced symptoms of indigestion after having switched from store-bought, pasteurized, and homogenized milk. In addition, three studies totaling 20,000 subjects showed that the consumption of raw milk has a significant benefit on the reduction of allergies and asthma. So why did we start pasteurizing in the first place? It's the most conservative play for mass production. Just in case there are harmful bacteria along for the ride, the pasteurization will take care of them. But most places, including Whole Foods and Erewhon, offer all types of raw cheese, and in the case of the latter grocery heaven, even raw milk. Goat milk exhibits similar, if not even greater, benefits than raw milk. The reason for this is that goat milk is a lot more like the milk that came out of our own mama's mammaries. The biological resemblance to human breast milk goes all the way down to the DNA structure itself. These similarities apply to protein structure, beta casein versus alpha casein, prebiotic content, oligosaccharides, and fat structure, small medium chain fatty acids versus long chain fatty acids. So what does all this mean? A study in France demonstrated that 93% of infants showed less allergic reaction to goat's milk than cow's milk. It's delicious, it's nutritious, it's even ambitious. It's for dinner, damn it! Sprouted or sourdough bread is the yeasty nectar of the gods. We have known this intuitively since ancient times. The Romans knew that there were two things they needed to provide to keep the populace happy: bread and circus. While I might caution against chariot races with no helmets or seatbelts, I'm not about to tell you in this book that you shouldn't eat bread. I love bread. There is nothing better than a good lump of sourdough or some sprouts.